Hey, welcome to FQ,
where we talk about faith, family, and friends.
I'm Jacob.
And I'm George.
And welcome to this week's podcast. Hey guys, welcome to this week's podcast. It is April 26, 2022. Crazy how we're almost halfway through the year. We have an awesome guest. I think we've been following each other for a while. I'm not really sure, but his name is Taylor Moon. He goes by what on TikTok?
Saved by Blood.
Saved by Blood. And so, how you doing, man?
Doing fantastic, man. Another awesome day. God's perfect world, right?
Yeah. So, well, I guess let's jump in. When you were growing up, did you grow up with a mom and a dad? How'd that look? Were they Christians? How did you get to where you are today, basically? And you can talk as long as you want. It's fine.
So, grown life story there, right? So, I born in Southern California. My parents were not married. My dad and my mom were together, I want to say, about 6 years, if I'm correct. I could be wrong, but I think it's about 6 years. And my dad left my mom before I was born. And neither one of them were believers. My dad went to a Methodist church when he was a kid. But, you know, he was I have long hair, yes, but my dad was a long-haired Southern California rocker, you know, Hollywood Boulevard guy, Harleys, all that stuff. And my mom, huge music buff, loves to sing. You know, she wanted to be a nurse her whole life. So that's what she pursued, but, she had me, and, my mom has kind of failed throughout the years with men. I've got 4 brothers and 1 sister on my mom's side, all different dads. That's okay. You know, life happens the way it happens. And we wouldn't be siblings if it weren't for the way that it happened. So I'm grateful of that. But yeah, my parents, I was in between 2 homes. Mostly I stayed with my grandparents, my great-grandparents actually, until I was 12 years old, my grandma and grandpa.
Yeah.
And they raised me. My grandpa Lloyd was in a wheelchair. The last, I want to say, 9 years of my life, I don't think I ever actually saw him walking. He had what was called bamboo back. He just slouched a lot and it became really a big problem with his spine. And so he was pushing around a wheelchair and teaching me how to play baseball and all that stuff. And my grandma was my rock. I mean, she taught me everything I know about writing, music.
That's awesome.
She taught me math. She taught me math. Yeah. My mom was in school to be a nurse, right? So like, she was doing that and holding 2 jobs because she had me and my brother, and she was a single mom. And so she needed help there. And my dad was only taking me on the weekends, and my little brother's dad wasn't part of the picture until later on in his life. And even then, our dads only were in our lives a certain amount of time. But when I was 10 years old, I want to say, I found out that my grandma had colon cancer. You know, she died in 91. She lived a long life. It was hard seeing that because, you know, she went to aerobics classes until she was 89.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. So watching her go through colon cancer and die was really hard on me. And when I was 12 years old, she passed away. And my grandpa died at 92 a year later. I just think he couldn't live without her anymore. Kind of just gave up, and it really tore me apart. I started going to church with my mom's mom, and
that's crazy, man.
You know, like, yeah.
Just a side comment. Like, how old are you?
I'm 30.
Okay, so I'm 34, and the same thing happened to me, like identical. Like, grandma died. Really? Or grandpa died, though. Grandma died. and then other grandma died. So like, and like the grandma that was like my rock was the last one that died. The same way, like you're talking about, she taught me so many things. She was a Christian, so she was telling me, taught me about the Bible and all that good stuff and like different things. But like my other grandma was also, she used to be a witch and then became a pastor of a church, which is another discussion that people get mad about, but it was what it was. Huh?
Right.
And so it was what it was. And so, they all like died like from 12, I think it was like 11, 12, and then 13 is when my grandma died. So that's why I was like, man, our stories are kind of similar in that aspect. Right. Go ahead though. Sorry.
No, you're totally fine. That's actually crazy. It was really hard. I was 12, so I started and I was able to understand things, right?
Yeah.
And as you said, Mike, and you could probably say the same thing, it was at an age where emotions like sorrow and depression were able to, you know, affect you. So, I started going to church. I accepted Jesus. Sat in a room with a pastor. He it was like they had cubicles or whatever, and I was with a youth group at like a Baptist. It was a really big Baptist church, and he prayed over me, and I cried because I was really hurting. I needed something because I had lost her, and that was the first time I thought I walked into salvation or walked into relationship with God, but. I don't, and we'll get into that later on in my story, but, I started doing that, right? I started going to church. It helped, I started doing like, my mom's mom was sending me on, she sent me on like the youth camps and stuff. And, to try to get me around other kids and stuff. That was pretty to myself. I liked to read. I didn't really like to be social and stuff at school. Even in elementary school, I was always kind of the one that hung out against the wall somewhere, and was reading. And with my name being Taylor Moon, I was always made fun of, Taylor Moon, which was always great. But I learned to take it on, so then it fell on my mom and my dad, and I was with my mom, Monday through Friday, and then my dad would take us Friday nights and drop me back off on at school on Monday, and then I'd go home, and it was a constant repetition of going back and forth between two places. My mom was she's a trauma nurse, and she works she used to work graveyard shift. She works day shift now, but she was a so she was working graveyard trauma shift, and so I got away with a lot at her house, right? Like, I went to church and all that other stuff, but I was kind of a hoodlum. And, I got into high school and I got into choir, which kind of kept me on a straight and narrow, until I turned 18, and choir was awesome. I did 4 years of that. I got into the 24 person select choir at my school, ended up graduating with a, scholarship for music. And, teacher, who was actually my mom's choir teacher when my mom was in school, which was pretty crazy. She was the one that gave me my first Bible, which actually is right here above me. It's a student application NLT Bible. Nice. And, I did all that. I was in high school, went between my parents' houses, and both my parents got really, heavily into alcohol. And that happened when I was, I want to say about 15, 16. So both of them just, it was weird because, they don't hang out. They,
you're like, don't even really whatever. Talk. Yeah.
Yeah. They talk about me, but whatever. But they both ended up, making it more prevalent in their lives. And that really caused a lot of problems between me and my parents. And I ended up leaving my dad's house when I was, after I turned 17, because he lifted me up by my throat while he was drunk. And my dad didn't act like that. You know, my dad wasn't a super loving person. He loved me. He definitely loved me. Right. But, and it took him a while to show that affection though, because his dad was like a Air Force. My grandpa, he was in the Air Force and he was more, you know, kind of cold, I guess you would say. Yeah. And so my dad didn't really know how to show affection. And when I was, sorry to go back a little bit, but when I was 14, I had to sit in front of my dad and cry, and I begged him. I said, you know, I want you to hug me, tell me you love me and stuff, because he'd always get off the phone and say, you know, talk to you later, man, and wouldn't say I love you too. And I was more emotional because my mom raised me and my grandparents raised me and stuff, you know, and my dad was this kind of, you know, I'm a rocker cool dude, you know, I don't really say I love you. But he started doing that. And anyway, you know, so it was at the age of 17 when he started getting into alcohol so bad, it was very strange for him to, it wasn't even over anything. I hadn't done anything. I was doing homework. I came and ate dinner. I got up and put my dishes in the sink, and we never asked to be excused from the table. And he acted like that was some crazy thing that I did by walking back in the room. And he came in and started screaming at me. I got up, you know, and lifted me up on my throat, and I grabbed my brother who was in a cast at the time, which my dad raised. So just to, sorry to make another side note, my dad raised my my brother Garrett. He's 3 years younger than me, my second brother, because Garrett's dad left for the first 3 years of his life. And so, you know, my dad took him in as his own, and he raised him until he was 18 years old. And and I'll get to this later, but sorry, I'll wait to get to that. But anyway, to go back to what I was saying, my brother was with me, is what I was trying to say. He stayed at my dad's house with me on the weekends because my dad raised him. And so my brother's in the cast because he played football and messed up his leg playing football. And so I, you know, super hurt, and, you know, because my dad, and crying, and I grabbed my brother, and, you know, we were walking down the street, and my dad's walking after us drunk, and I'm calling my friends to pick me up, and they take me to my mom's. And I didn't want to go back to my dad's anymore until he, you know, I told him until he stopped drinking or whatever. And it became a problem with my mom. And my mom was trying to force me to go. So I started running away from my mom's house. And ended up getting, you know, they called the police and brought me home. And, you know, my dad, I guess, you know, kind of understood what he had done and, you know, didn't necessarily stop drinking or anything, but he, you know, paid more attention, I guess. And I didn't really like go to his house as often, but just a little bit until I turned 18.
Yeah.
And anyway, you know, 3 months before I graduated high school, so the girl I was with throughout high school, her name was, well, I'm not gonna say her name, I don't want to say her name. Her and I were together for almost 3 years, and she was the first girl I ever slept with. First girl I ever really loved, you know, or felt I loved. And 3 months before I graduated high school, after we had broken up, after some pretty, like, horrific fights, you know, she cried rape on me. Yeah. And
oh, shoot.
That was a really hard thing because, like, you know, I figured it was going to, I knew it was ending badly, but I didn't think that it was going to come to that extent. And so I had, you know, I come back from a choir tour, actually, and it was a couple months before graduation, and there's cops in my house and sitting me and my mom down and asking me a bunch of questions about, obviously, these things that she's saying. And I go back to school before graduation, and none of my friends will talk to me. And I started getting, you know, I was removed from classes because we were in classes together and stuff. And so this whole process happened during graduation, graduated high school, and didn't have a graduation party. It was rough, and you know, I didn't have any friends after I graduated high school, and you know, it was like the first summer before I was turning 18, because I was in July. So
yeah,
I started hanging out with, you know, some of the guys down the street from my mom's house, and they, you know, smoked pot, and so I got into that, and they were into some other, you know, hallucinogens and stuff. And so I ended up doing mushrooms, and, further on, you know, down the road, I started getting into raving, and ecstasy was a really big problem for me. I took I can't even tell you how many pills within a 6 month period of time. The first time I did it, it was like butter on toast, you know, and that's where I turned to, because I, you know, and all those people accepted me. And, you know, this whole process of this thing with the cops, she ended up dropping the charges. She said that, you know, she had falsified information. They came to me. They wanted me to, you know, they asked me if I wanted to pursue her for slander. And my mom and my family were trying to, you know, get me into doing this, but I'd already gotten into drugs and I didn't care. I wanted it to be over. And, you know, I'd taken the money that I'd gotten for my, my singing scholarship and spent that on drugs. You know, my dad gave me a car when I was 18. I was like the one thing they promised they would do if I graduated high school. And that became my means of just doing more drugs. And so like within a 2 year period of time until I was 20, I should have died. I was in the hospital a few times. I got on crystal meth about a year into my drug addiction. And that just was a spiral. And anyway, I came to a point where I was in my car. I was about to turn 20, and I hadn't eaten in a week, almost. I mean, very little, if I had. I mean, I couldn't remember. I'd been up for so long. And
were you probably like
I called one of my friends.
Were you like a twig then? Because, I mean, you were on a bunch of stuff. I mean, even worse.
Yes. I was very bad off. You know, I was living in my car. My mom was kicking me out of the house all the time. I mean, from when I was 18 until the point I moved up to Washington, she was just, I was moving in and then moving out, moving in and moving out. And, but I was living in my car and I, you know, met this girl. We lived together for a while in Palm Springs. She ended up being into meth as well. That turned into terrible things. I moved up to Washington. Right before I was 20, and I've actually the way I moved up here is on Craigslist. I found an ad for magazine salesman door to door, and they offered to buy you a ticket for a bus, and as long as you would start working. So I called them. They hired me. I moved to Washington on a bus. It was a 2 day bus ride. I was selling magazines door to door for, I want to say, 2 months, and until I realized that they were just pocketing the money and they weren't actually selling magazines, you know, and they were just moving around the country consistently trying, you know, they accept checks and cash, but then they would just take the cash and throw away the check. And so, I realized I'd gotten into this weird gang or something, you know, and so, like, I called one of my friends who was living in Washington, who used to live in California. She let me move into her house. And or her family did, and they helped me get off of crystal meth, because I was doing that stuff even with the guys that were selling magazines, and they helped me get off crystal meth.
Were they paying you though?
Well, I mean, they were paying me with drugs, and I was staying in a hotel with them, right? So it was like they had like 6 rooms with all these, you know, a bunch of young people, and then they had like a couple vans, and then every morning we'd get up and go to different neighborhoods and knock on doors and, you know, come up with, hey, I'm part of a soccer team and blah, 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 this, and, or, you know, selling, you know, or I'm trying to get money from, I was very bad at it. I'm not like a good salesman, right? So like they were trying to like teach me how to do this stuff. And I'm like, we're just lying to these people, you know? And like, that's what I mean. I realized that I was doing it for the drugs, right? Like they were feeding me drugs and keeping me alive. So, but yeah, so my friend let me move into her house with her family, and they were very gracious to do so. They did not need to, and they were Christians. Not my friend, but her I think her mom and her sister. And anyway, that was a 6 month period of time I lived with them. I met a girl, moved in with her, bad relationship. Terrible stuff happened with her. I would like go lay in my car because she would like get up in the middle of the night and like throw pillows at me for no reason. And I don't even know how to
You're like, are we doing? You're like, are we doing a pillow fight right now? What just happened?
Yeah, I mean, I've never experienced like some of the things I've experienced with some people, but yeah, I mean, you know, we had a lot of bad fights, and then it turned into stuff where she was just like do things because she was angry at all times. I don't know. It was a really bad relationship, and nothing that was real about it. But like, got out of that relationship, and we, you know, I was living in an apartment that we had gotten, and she moved out of that apartment, and that was my first place. You know, I'd never had my own place before, and met a couple people through this another girl that I met, and she moved in with me, and then we've had friends of hers move in with us, and they were, you know, we all had roommates now, and they all were kind of like ravers, so they you know, did like ecstasy and acid and stuff, so we got into that stuff, and it wasn't as prevalent as my old addiction, I guess, you know, but I was still doing that stuff. And then one day we were together for 9 months, and one day we had a friend come over, and he had crystal meth, and I hadn't done it in, you know, over a year, almost a year and a half or something. And I don't know, I was just weak, I guess, you know, and I did it with him once. I told her about it, and she had her mom come, and they picked up all her stuff, and that was it. She was gone.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, I lived with my roommates for a while, and went from, you know, online, although that was when like Plenty of Fish was a big thing, right? So I'm doing all this like online dating, right? Because I'm lonely and I'm in Washington. I have no, my family has, you know, they don't talk to me anymore because I was a drug addict living in my car. And I stole a bunch of money from my mom when I was living with her. And that's another reason why she kicked me out of the house, other than just doing the drugs. And, but anyway, I came to this point with my roommates, where I realized that, you know, because one of them was actually, you know, he did drugs here and there, but he was actually more, he came from a Christian household, and like he wanted to see me like succeed, and he saw that I was, you know, failing in this regard, and so like he motivated me to do better things, like play music or, you know, go for walks and whatever. So I started doing more things like that and getting more into life, opposed to just, you know, having an apartment and doing drugs and whatever. And so anyway, so that went on for a while, and we had like four dudes all living in a two-bedroom apartment, you know, so we had like the living room sectioned off with a curtain so two dudes could share basically a room, you know, but it was just to make rent super cheap. And
our roommate in Bible college actually lived in the kitchen. So like the dining room. We had the dining room. We took our table, threw it off our balcony, and it blew up, and then we threw it away. But like, we put his little bed, he had like a single bed, a dresser, and a TV. And so we just made it a little room, and he's like, I love it. But he wanted roommates, so he's like, I want to live with you guys. And then we had a friend that just couch surfed the whole time while we were in college. And so we're like, whatever. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, no, it was cool, right? Like, we're all metalheads,
yeah,
right? And we all like video games and stuff, so we'd sit there and just, you know, blare metal and, you know, play Call of Duty and stuff all the time, and, you know, we all smoke cigarettes, so we'd all sit there and smoke cigarettes, and, anyway, that went on for a while, and then there was some falling out that happened, because one of my friends let his friend move in, and his girlfriend didn't like me, and so that all ended up falling out, and they wanted me to move out, which was really hard for me because the one that I said motivated me and stuff, he was my best friend. I mean, one of the best friends I've ever had. When his grandma died, he came and got in bed with me, and he just held me and I held him. And he had a girlfriend and all that stuff, but he was just so upset and he needed someone to be there for him. And I just was there for my friend, you know, I mean, he was my brother and I cared about him and I didn't want to see him hurting in this way. And so like, it was really hard for me to let go of this friend, and we don't talk anymore either. And it still really hurts me that he's not a part of my life anymore, because he was, we went through I lived with him for 2 years. He was really awesome.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I moved out of there and moved in somewhere else. I met another girl. We lived together, had roommates, you know, went on that path for a while. And, at this point I'm not doing meth anymore. And I think I was 23, and so So that we move out of there, we move in another area. We break up, you know, I meet another girl, and it's just back and forth between all these girls for a while. And, I end up, working at different jobs. I was a groundskeeper at an apartment complex for a while. And, I worked at 7-Eleven for a while, and I ended up for about 6 years. I was up until just this last summer, actually, I was a prep cook at Papa Murphy's Pizza. So I just went in every morning, made the dough, cut the cheese, chopped the veggies, stuff like that.
Nice.
It was good money. And, I was a supervisor, and, I worked with a lot of cool people, but, so I went through all these relationships. And then in 2018, I'll go back a little bit more. So in 2016, I was with, this was about my dad. So in 2016, I was with a girl, we were together for 4 years. She got pregnant in 2015, and she ended up having a miscarriage with twins. And it was really hard. She, we were together for about a year and a half or 2 years before this happened. And so we were established relationship, and, my parents knew her and so on and so forth. And but when she had the miscarriage, it really did destroy that relationship. There was no reconciling anymore. We couldn't even talk, right? I mean, she blamed herself. She blamed me. It was just, and I couldn't get through. And it was really hard. So, but in the process of this relationship, my dad died, and she was there for me through that. And I was 25. And, after I turned 18, and the whole thing with my dad with the alcohol stuff, when I was an adult, my dad and I were cool. I called him almost every week. Every week. We talked all the time, because I was an adult at this point, right? He treated me like an adult, whereas before he had to discipline me all the time and treat me like a kid. But at this point, he's talking to me like I'm almost like his friend, And so I talked to him all the time. Me and him became closer than even my mom and I were. And I was with my mom all the time throughout my childhood. When I was 25, he drank himself to death.
Man.
And, I prayed that I wouldn't get emotional during this, so I'm going to really try.
You're okay, man. It's completely fine. Nobody gets upset on the podcast about it. I mean, because literally they can't tell us anything. So you're good.
I didn't realize how much my dad did for me when I was a kid. He taught me how to be a man. He disciplined me a lot. He definitely didn't show love in a lot of ways that he should have. But my dad loved me. I know in my heart my dad loved me, and he just wanted me to succeed. I got bad grades, and he could never do the things that he wanted to do, and he wanted to teach me how to dirt bike, and he never got that chance because I failed him by never just succeeding in school.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't do things for you if you can't just succeed, because I didn't want to do my homework, I didn't want to do this stuff. And he knew that. And it's like, and I just squandered that relationship so much when I was a kid. But he taught me how to be who I am. When my dad died, I had short hair. Now I've got long hair down to my chest, because it's for him. I recognize that, he'd always say that, grow your hair out and come back to California. every time we were on the phone, you're going to grow your hair back out and come back down to California, man. And, I promised him that I would grow my hair out, but I told him I wouldn't come back to California. And, I said a speech at my dad's funeral, and everything I step into, when it comes to my fleshly side, it definitely comes from my dad. My mom taught me how to love people, have a caring heart towards people. She taught me how to, help others and sacrifice myself for others. But my dad helped me be firm, if it wasn't for him, I don't know. I really don't. I don't know if my mom could have just done it without him. But anyway, I talked to him 2 days before he died, you know. We were talking about a fishing trip we were going to take.
Yeah.
And 2 days later, my brother calls me and he's just screaming. He's dead, dude. He's dead. And I'm just like, this isn't real. This is not real, man. And like, the next day I flew down to California, and a week later I'm at a funeral. It was, you know, and he was married, and, you know, right before he was married, or right before he died, him and his wife were getting a divorce. She took him drunk to a notary and had him sign divorce papers away. It was completely wasted. And, you know, that was 3 months before he died, and she wouldn't talk to him, wouldn't have anything to do with him. I have his phone with all of his texts talking to her where she's not responding, and him saying how much he loved her. Yeah. And then he dies, and all of a sudden she comes back into the picture, and it's like, my husband this, and all of my stuff this. And it was hard, man. I just needed to be there for my brothers, and she was in here stealing everything from my life. I mean, I barely made it out with what I made it out with. I had to go in there and just, like, get as much as I could of my dad's stuff and leave, you know? And, I mean, all the t-shirts that I do have left that I did take from his drawers are all ripped up and shredded because I've worn them so much.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, you know, I didn't get to mourn for my dad because I was fighting her the whole time. And anyway, you know, it was rough. And, somehow I made it through it. Even how broken I was.
Yeah.
And about a year later, me and that girl that I was with broke up. And for a few months, I was, you know, just working and doing my own thing. And I ended up meeting another girl on Tinder. And she had 3 boys. They were, at the time, they were, oh man, and you remember their ages, 7, 3, and, or 4, and 2. Yeah, 7, 4, and 2. And came into her life, and, you know, I was so scared at first because I didn't know how to be a dad. And, but man, I picked up on it so fast. I loved those kids. I dropped my job because she, you know, she had a really good job. She was a CNA, and she was making really good money, and I wasn't making very much, and compared to the, you know, scope of what she had. And so I took care of her kids for 3 years, and throughout the process of doing that, you know, I loved her and loved her kids immensely. We had some really bad fights when it came to the end of our relationship about the last 9 months. She had mental disorders that she stopped taking her medications for. And, I mean, very, very problematic mental disorders that she needed to be on meds for. And we weren't, you know, me and her family were urging her and trying to help her, and she would not listen to us. And when we first met, she was on them, and she was so happy and joyous and free. And yet, when she got off them, it was like she didn't recognize the prison that she had fallen into. And I tried helping her out of it, and she pulled me into it with her, and I, you know, she started beating me to the point where I was calling the cops. She almost went to jail, but I couldn't send her to jail because of her boys. And, you know, it got to a point where, like, our neighbors were seeing her hitting me outside, and, you know, they were going to call the police. So she came to the point where she came home one day, and all of a sudden she's leaving, and the boys are all crying, and I'm holding them. I'm just telling them how much I love them and to never forget that, because I don't know if I'm ever going to see them again. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm the one that got them up every morning, fed them breakfast, gave them baths, taught them how to read, taught them how to go to the bathroom. Like, I don't know. I taught them so much, you know, and, like, I mean, they were my boys. And her sister took them, and then she left, and a couple of days later, her sister called me, and we started talking about what was going on, and I tried to explain as best I could because I didn't understand. And then she found out that she was cheating on me, that she had been in a relationship for 4 months, and while living with me, sleeping next to me. She had gotten pregnant and had an abortion with some other man's child with me, and I just broke. I mean, even further than with my dad, I didn't understand.
Yeah.
I'd done everything I possibly could to show her I loved her and her kids, but I loved them. And, for the next month, I, you know, tried to stay in contact with her sister as much as I could. I kept messaging her every day, like, to the point of annoyance, but she loved me, you know, but I was messaging her. I love those kids. I love the boys. Tell them I love them. Please just tell them I love them.
Yeah.
And, but I couldn't live without them. And I came to a point where I wanted to kill myself. And it was like 3 a.m. October 2020. I don't remember which day. But I remember it was like 3 a.m. and I was going to do it. I was ready to do it. I was done. I said, if I wasn't going to be with them anymore, I'm not going to be with them anymore. I don't want to live life without my kids.
Wow.
And I tried to find something. I was alone in this house. All the memories of them. I tried to find something to hang myself with. And I found that Bible that my choir teacher gave me. Somehow it made it to Washington with me. Somehow it made it in that closet. I have no idea. No idea. But I sat there and I bawled my eyes out and I read Luke. I read about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane and him crying out to God, crying out to the Father, saying, please take this cup of suffering away from me.
Yep.
But your will be done and not mine. And then I read what he did for us in a way that I'd never read it before. And I cried out to him and I said, please, if I am not alone, then show me that I am not alone in this forsaken world, because I do not want to be here anymore. If it is for me, I am done. And he gave me life. I mean, I had never experienced anything like this before. I didn't have a seizure. I didn't have some crazy epiphany. I knew that I was loved.
That's awesome.
Like, I knew that I was held in that moment, that I wasn't lost, that I wasn't forsaken, but that I was found. And I was just blown away by this understanding that I wasn't alone. And every step since, and don't get me wrong, I have failed him since then multiple times on countless occasions.
Yeah.
But every step has been trying to get closer to him, trying to figure out how I can do better in this life for him and for him alone. Because for 30 years, I lived for myself, and for 30 years, I went from relationship to relationship, from parent to parent, from nothing to nothing, and couldn't find anything worth continuing to breathe for. And then he came. And now all I want every day is him.
Amen.
Nothing more. And because of that,
because I surrendered to him in that moment and acknowledged that he was the king of my life. If no one else, he has given me a woman that I never thought I would meet. And we got married. She's Christian. She's from a Christian household. She goes to a great church. I am now part of that church. I'm being discipled underneath great pastors.
That's awesome.
My wife is now pregnant 6 months, and we are having a little girl in July. None of that would have happened without. None of that would have happened without him.
That's awesome.
I'm so sorry. I'm trying to talk clearly.
You are talking clearly. You're doing good, man. That's awesome. So you've been saved for what, like a year and a half, and you're going to Bible college now?
I would say that in October of 2020 is when he came to me and when I accepted his free gift. And since then, I've been walking with him. In November, I wanted to be a video game designer. I love video games. That's where I transferred my drug addiction to.
Yeah.
Was video games. But I wanted to be a video game designer, and I wanted to make games that reach people, because I liked the games that held meaning. And I felt, I loved to read when I was a kid, and I always loved that authors wanted to give you good meaning behind their books, or they had, those things. So I wanted to make games that were heartfelt and people would experience something, from my heart. But in November, I, started doing TikTok. I want to say November, maybe a little before that. And I started just, everybody on TikTok was so vibrant to me and was just like, wow, we love your messages. And, I had a bunch of people, messaging me saying, we can't wait to see what the Lord has planned for you. And it humbled me so much. I wasn't sitting here going, wow, this makes me so prideful. It goes, what are you calling me to do? And I sat down with the pastor of our church. Our grandparents, we moved from Southern Washington to Northern Washington back in August. We're living in a mother-in-law house in the backyard of my wife's grandparents.
That's cool.
So we don't have to, it's cool because we're not paying rent at the moment.
You're almost in Canada though.
Yeah. Yeah. But luckily not. But anyway, it's nice, but they've been going to the same church for over 40 years. And, it's a Reformed Baptist church, and, they stick to the Bible, and it's, so I was really wanting to just fellowship with my pastor. And our church isn't very big, it's a small, we live in small town. And so we have about 40 members tops that come to our church. But anyway, I talked to my pastor and was like, hey, I feel this calling on my life. Like, I wanted to be a video game designer, but I feel this calling. And we prayed about it a lot, and we talked about it a lot, and he was very encouraged. And so he led me to a seminary, and that's what I'm doing. I'm fighting for the Lord as best I can to become whatever he wants me to be. I do feel a strong calling to teach or to shepherd in some way, but I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket because I want to let God lead.
That's awesome, man. That is such an awesome testimony. It was a long road, man. But, you have a long road ahead of you that God's going to do awesome things, and you're going to do awesome things. So I'm excited to see what's in the future for you.
Thank you.
So, all that, that's crazy, man. That's an awesome testimony. And I really think that oftentimes, when you're talking, I just was thinking of there's so many times where you had setback after setback after setback. And then you're like, I don't know. And then God still shows up. And oftentimes people are like, well, I can debate somebody into Jesus. And sometimes I'm like, you can't debate somebody into Jesus. You can you live your life, and sometimes you're reflecting Jesus to people, and they see it and go, there's something weird about that guy. Or, like, your choir teacher gave you a Bible years ago that right. at the moment you needed God the most, he showed up. And, I mean, there are people that could be listening to this podcast right now who are like, I'm in that dark space, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I feel like this is my last resort. And, you know, but God, that's all I have to say is he'll show up, but you got to go to him. You can't just be like, I think he's there. He loves you. He cares about you, and he wants you to live in glory. And it's still hard. Both of us are Christians, and like, it's not easy. You still have your ups and downs. We still fail. We still mess up, but literally God's still there, and he's got grace and mercy and shows it all the time where you're like, I don't know why you forgive me. I'm a failure. I make big mistakes. All that stuff, but he's still like, I'm still here. I still love you. I still have a plan for you, and I still have a purpose for you. And so don't give up if you're listening to this podcast. You got anything else, man?
I don't think so at all, man.
I think this is a great spot to probably wrap up the podcast. I don't know if you've listened to our podcast, but something we do with our guests is we ask them to pray us out of the podcast.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Father God, I come before you always in thanks to your son for what he did on the cross. Thank you for bringing us rightly with you, reconciling us to you, redeeming us to you through your son's blood. Father, our hearts are always ever before you, and we ask that you guide us into the ways that you need us in your will. Father, I ask that you come into the people's lives that are listening to this that do not know you, that you would show them your face if they are speaking, and that you would answer the door if you are knocking like you promised you would do. Father, I know that you are faithful, and I am grateful that you are able to show me that. And I know that you are not going to fail the other ones who call out to you. So, Father, I'm just thankful that you've given me this opportunity to be here, that you've given me the opportunity to get to know the people I've gotten to know and make new friends along the way, that you've helped strengthen me. I love you, Father God, and I thank you again for your son. In his name I pray. Amen.
Amen.